Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the first episode of the Sediment for 2022. We are here at the Sheraton in downtown Denver recording our very first return to in-person programming. We're super excited. We hope to bring you a daily episode for PAS, and then we will do a virtual episode after PAS is over so that we can catch up with all of our guests and speakers. The Sediment, of course, is the official American Society of Pediatric Nephrology podcast, and I am your editor, Sudha Garimella. We have great guests here today. We will start with having them introduce themselves around the room, and we'll start first with our first guest, the program chair, Dr. David Selesky.
My name is Dr. David Selesky. I'm a pediatric nephrologist at the Medical University of South Carolina. I am the American Society of Pediatric Nephrology program chair for this year. And a fun fact about me is that I grew up in Michigan, but now live in the warm, sunny state of Charleston.
Yay, wonderful. Right now, today, we have over-representation from the South, I think, because our next guest is Dr. Stella Shen from Atlanta, Emory University. I'll let her introduce herself.
Hi, I'm Stella Shen. I'm also a pediatric nephrologist in Atlanta at Emory University and Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. And a fun fact about me is that I was in an a cappella group in college, and we produced two albums during my time as a member.
A cappella, wow. Okay, so I guess another episode of The Sediment is going to have musical talent show. We promised that last year, we just never got around to it. We also said that Dave would have a Twitter account. I don't know. Has that happened yet, Dave?
I do not have a Twitter account.
Oh, come on. How long are you going to hold out?
We'll get you on Twitter one day.
It's a place on the bingo board for the neonatal kidney group, so I can't take that away from them.
They'll find other things. We need you on Twitter. All right. Well, we'll keep trying during ASPN 22. But I'm really, really excited to have you on the show this year to start off our kickoff episode, because I want you to tell us a little bit about what being a program chair entails. When did you start preparing for this, and what are you looking forward to?
Okay. So the program development starts with, as a chair, there are always three members that make up the chair team, or the chairpersons. And you cycle through that three-member team, and becoming more senior as you go. And so this, I started out as a co-chair now 3 years ago. This is my third year as a chair, so 2 years ago.
Wow, okay.
And then you take on more responsibility until you're the program chair at the third year.
Mm-hmm.
And so my co-chairs this year are Kimberly Reedy and Michelle Denberg.
Mm-hmm.
Kimberly Reedy will be doing be the program chair next year, and Michelle Denberg to follow. The person that will make up the third going forward will be Catherine Dell as well. And so you learn, through the first 2 years, you learn a lot about the process, and then you take over. And there's a lot that, as you might imagine, there's a lot that goes into developing the program.
Oh,
it
sure.
Honestly starts about January to February, 15 months before the program the year 15 months later.
Oh, so you were already preparing for 22 when PAS 21 was going on.
Yes, and so the way that starts is you develop a team, so the program committee, and each year folks are cycle on and off of the committee. They typically will be on for about 2 years, and so you start inviting folks again January and February and ensuring the composition of it. And then you elicit from the committee and from the ASPN at large program ideas
mm-hmm.
for the following year. And then you usually get between 40 to 50 ideas for symposium and workshops.
Okay.
And then through the years of COVID now, we've developed a situation where we work in advance of the in-person meeting that takes place at PAS because of the challenges with COVID, we could not meet.
Sure, yeah.
And so that has streamlined the process. So we will work in subgroups to develop various symposium that then we bring in person and spend time hashing out at the program committee the day before the previous year's
mm-hmm.
PAS.
Okay.
And so by the time we leave PAS this year, the ASPBN program program for next year, so for 2023, will be largely finalized.
Wow. Yeah. So there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, there is.
So if we see you running around the conference center with big files and folders, we know that that is the culmination of about 15 months of hard work.
Yes, indeed. And then we spend a few weeks after the PAS program finalizing things. And then the person that's in charge next year, so Dr. Reedy, will present the program to council at a virtual meeting either in May or June. I'm not sure which one it will be.
Okay. So you must have got a lot of interesting pitches for symposia, right? Because there's a lot going on in the world of pediatric nephrology that deserves attention. So what are some of the symposia ideas that you liked?
So, it's really interesting because when there's topics that are hot or interesting in nephrology, we would often get three or four that are in a similar
group,
and then we would use those to combine the best parts of them to come up with them.
Oh,
and
that's so nice, yeah.
And like, so there's a number this year that I'm excited about, and to be fair, after working this hard on it, I feel like they're all, I'm excited about all of them, to be fair.
They're all your babies.
Right, that's exactly right. And you look at them and you go, how can I not mention this or that after all that we've gone, that's gone into it. But there is things that I'd like to highlight for the folks on this podcast. I'm really excited about the Schnapper. This is the first year of the Schnapper lecture, and it'll be over the nephrotic syndrome on Saturday morning. And the first Schnapper lecturer is Dr. Moeen Salim from Europe, who will be talking about biomarkers in nephrotic syndrome. There's also the Spitzer lectureship, which will be on Sunday morning at 8 a.m. And that's that looks at novel mechanisms for rare diseases and novel mechanisms and therapies for rare diseases. And Dr. Cherquai, I apologize if I mispronounced that, will be discussing the work around cystinosis and bone marrow transplants. And so that'll be particularly exciting. So those are the two named lectureships.
Right, yes. And those symposia, I liked, at least, you know, I'm really looking forward to both of them, right, Stella? Because what I like about ASPN in general is that it has something to offer for everybody. It has something to offer clinicians. It has something to offer researchers. It has something to offer trainees and leadership development, all of these things. But the way the symposia have been designed, they sort of, each lecture addresses a different aspect of that topic. So that I thought was very well thought out.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, the program committee puts a lot of time and effort to make sure, and, you know, to do that and also to hit the breadth of topics that are important to the ASPN membership, so that everybody has something that they're passionate about likely on the program somewhere.
That's right.
And so I think that that's something that we work very hard to do. I hope that this program reflects that.
Absolutely. So we're looking forward to that. Now, I have one more question for you, which is when you thought about inviting lecturers, people to give lectures here at ASPN, did you put any thought into diversity and, you know, whom you're inviting?
Yeah, so diversity is very important to us in a number of areas in terms of how we compose the program. We both not only want a diversity of ideas in the program, so some differences like in acute care versus glomerular disease versus chronic kidney disease, as well as in the speakers, okay? And so one of the areas that I am most proud of, and I think the ASPN does an excellent job of, is a diversity and also the level of experience of speakers. So we are very cognizant. If you look at the different speakers for each of the sessions, you'll find junior people, some mid-level people, and then some senior people for each of the sessions. And that is very thoughtfully done to try to ensure that we have a pipeline of folks that are coming up and sort of moving on. As I sort of kid, if I'm working this hard in 10 years, then I've failed at moving folks
right.
along.
Yeah.
So not only in seniority of speakers, but also in the composition of the speakers, which is obviously a very important and hot topic these days in terms of that. And so we worked very hard to ensure representation as best as we could in terms of female versus female mm-hmm. to male, as well as the composition of the racial backgrounds of the speakers and those things as well.
Yes, I think that that is important enough that we appreciate the fact that everybody's voice is heard at ASPN. And when you bring more voices to the table, it also spurs and fosters more thought process and research. It drives forward new ideas. So I'm really happy that ASPN has taken that approach, that they want to promote not only experience versus inexperience, but also different backgrounds and different life experiences so that we can all contribute in our own ways. But and I know you can't see this on the podcast, but Dave has actually got a tally over there, right?
Yes, yes.
He's got a little page with like how many women speakers, how many men speakers.
We do, and I wasn't sure how granular we were going to get with the podcast. I didn't want to be through the papers, but again, the for both the moderators and the speakers, the about 65% to 70% are female.
Yes, which I think I may be wrong, but I think that reflects the composition of pediatricians too.
Yeah, that I believe is my understanding from the ASPN. There is an abstract which mm-hmm. goes over this.
Yeah.
By Dr. Darcy Weidemans, the senior author on it, that'll be up on Sunday night. That actually has the granular numbers down to the.
Oh, we'll be sure to go by and take a look at that because this is an important topic for our workforce, so that we can be well positioned for the future. Excellent. What else do we have to look forward to, Dave?
So we have a partnership with the European Society of Pediatric Nephrology and the American Society of Pediatric Nephrology. And so each year we're able to bring speakers over mm-hmm. That are experts in their field from Europe. And it's really exciting this year. We actually have two speakers. One was able to come in person and one was not, but still speaking. But Dr. Dieter Hafner will be speaking in the FGF 23 session. He's the president of the European Society of Pediatric Nephrology, and so he'll be that I'm very excited about that. And Dr. Rosanna Capo, mm-hmm. who is the world expert on pediatric IgA and IgA vasculitis, will be giving a talk virtually, pre-recorded, but will be able to present on Sunday afternoon, and so that is exciting. I have to say, because of my biases in life and what I do as a critical care nephrologist in pediatrics, I am super excited about the workshop on neonatal continuous renal replacement therapy.
I knew he was going to say
Sunday
that.
I couldn't get away without a plug for it. That is when I'm really excited. They've put it's case-based, and mm-hmm. they'll be talking about all of the modalities that people use for CRT in neonates.
Yes, and congratulations. You've managed to put together all the people, I think, in the field who are pushing that genre forward. And, you know, NEF Madness this year, novel devices did pretty well.
Yeah.
So I think this is a topic of interest to all of us. Moving on, Stella, what are you looking forward to?
Well, first I want to recognize all of the work that you've done, Sudha, as podcast editor and co-chair of the Communications Committee and putting all of this together, as well as our other co-chair, Sudha Menamadu, who's not here today, and the rest of the Communications Committee. I mean, it's a tremendous amount of work, and I think everybody's really worked well together to get it all to happen. And
it's truly enjoyable, and Communication Committee is the place to be. Calm, so come on and join us.
That's right. The more members, the merrier.
One of the other sessions I'm really excited about is the best name session that we had here, I would argue, and that is the training to become a Jedi Master session.
I knew it, yes.
I forgot to mention it before, yes. And it just slipped my mind, but Daniel Serrano came up with that name, and it's about justice, equality, diversity, and inclusion. Justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion in pediatric nephrology. And so that'll be Saturday morning, and she has little Jedi pins that she has.
Oh, my goodness, those pins are awesome. Where can I get one?
I got one from Daniel Serrano.
So, all right, Dr. Serrano, I'm going to come find you.
Everybody's
going to
be wanting one of those pins.
Yes, yes. The Venn diagram of pediatric nephrologists and Star Wars enthusiasms, I think, is a complete circle. So everyone is looking forward to the JEDI session. That is definitely an amazing session that we're going to look forward to. So another thing that struck me was that, is this our first hybrid conference, really?
So this is. And so through the years, through the COVID PAS ASPM programs, one of the things that came out of it that was really a bright spot is people were very happy about being able to access talks in an on-demand way,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it's very difficult and physically impossible to be in two places at once at the PAS
mm-hmm.
With a lot of sessions going on at the same time. They wanted to carry forward the ability to be able to access the sessions after the meeting.
Right.
And the specifics of how long that'll go on for will be on the PAS website. But the speakers were asked to pre-record a session that will be accessible to the participants. And then they'll also give a live talk. And they're not the same talk necessarily, but they're pretty close. But
mm-hmm.
of course, from the time they pre-record things, sometimes things change.
Change, right, yes.
As you do it.
I'm always changing my slides till the last second.
Exactly right. And so this is something really cool because it carries forward something that people liked
mm-hmm.
from COVID and the meetings that were done virtually. And so we've taken a piece of that, the PAS folks and the ASPN folks, and have taken some of the good out of it and carried that forward. And I believe that'll be going forward for the future, is my understanding.
That is, I am thrilled about that, I'll tell you, because, you know, every year at ASPN, if I had a problem, it was that so many sessions are simultaneously scheduled, and they're literally always at opposite ends of the convention center, so we're scurrying from place to place, and it's exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel bad, because if you miss a session, then you don't have a chance to see that again. But now with the hybrid model, I really like the fact that I can go back home and maybe access something next week, which I missed during this weekend. And also, of course, it is a shorter program this year, isn't it? We have no Tuesday programming.
Yep, we have no Tuesday programming this year. A couple of the other changes that have occurred as a result of that is the sessions are now 90 minutes long, and the speakers will be speaking each for, generally speaking, except for some of the workshops, for 20 minutes.
Okay.
And there'll be 10 minutes for questions at the end. And this will, but despite this, we have not had to change the amount of programming. So it's the same
mm-hmm.
number of symposium and workshops. But they have found, based on feedback from years past, that shortening it by a day seemed to be was a popular idea.
Right. We're all busy. We need
yeah.
to get back to our call schedules.
Yeah.
So this works out great. So what is it now? They used to have an hour, the speakers? Or?
So the sessions used to be 2 hours long.
2 hours long.
And the speakers would have 25 minutes.
Okay. So
and
now
there would be questions at the end. And so now they've shortened it a little bit.
20 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. So if that was a podcast, you would be listening to it at 1 1/4 speed.
Yeah, right? No. And to be fair, I think it's a good change. And it
yes.
Yeah,
yes.
People can.
I'll be the first
be
one
efficient.
To admit that if I have a mic and a podium, I sometimes get a lot more verbal than I would otherwise. I have a problem with sticking with time. So it'll be good to see how our speakers do with this new format. Of course, there is CME as always. Any thoughts about our fellowship and where we are meeting and networking?
So that's actually a really cool new thing that's happened this year. I'm not sure if that's exactly the lines you were asking, but I wanted
mm-hmm.
to mention it.
Yeah.
One of the for the first time, that PAS is trying out at large multidisciplinary networking opportunities.
Yes, I saw that. There is one on neonatal AKI
yep.
that I am planning to stop by and see what they are doing over there, which is interesting.
They're designed to be sessions, and there's ones for cardiology, neonatology as well, and other sorts of subspecialties as you might imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But to put everybody in the room, and the moderators will come up with three predefined topics.
Oh.
The folks will be sitting at tables, and you'll be able to chat about what you think to be important and brainstorm and come up with ideas.
Well, that sounds really cool.
There'll be like coffee and sodas and things like that available.
Well, I'll go anywhere there's coffee.
I'm so glad you brought that up because I didn't even realize that was something that was on the program.
Yeah, that's brand new this year.
Yeah, that's
and so
very exciting.
The neonatal AKI session is at 2:40 on Saturday as well, which then sort of rolls into the neonatal oral abstract presentation, neonatal AKI oral abstract presentation.
Wonderful. Yes. Yeah. And so we are excited to have Jody join us. Jody, welcome. You know Stella.
Yes,
and
yes.
You know
hi,
Dave.
Hi. Yes,
if
of
you
course,
don't know I'm Dave, I would be worried.
I know exactly. No. We're so excited for the program that he's put together, and everyone's super excited for the next few days.
Thank you so much. So we're going to backtrack just a little bit and have you introduce yourself.
Yep.
And then tell us a fun fact about yourself.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm Jody Smith. I'm a nephrologist at Seattle Children's, and I'm very excited to be part of the ASPN Council and the leadership team. A fun fact about me, well, we were just talking about this in the council meeting, is that although I am on Twitter, I've never sent a tweet. So it is embarrassing, especially since I work with Joseph Flynn, who is quite infamous.
He is,
his
yes.
tweeting. So I feel.
Well, today is the day, Jody.
Yes, today I do feel that. I've asked my friend Shina Menon to support me in my first tweet. So look out, it will be coming this weekend, hopefully.
Excellent. We are excited about that. And so you are at what I call the step two. You have an account and you haven't tweeted. Dave, unfortunately, is still at step one, where he doesn't even have an account.
You're sitting at the right table.
I'm glad to be advanced over someone.
And then Stella's at the top of the ladder. She is the chair of the communications committee.
Oh, okay. Well,
so
I can't compete
we're
normal, I
well represented over here. Excellent. Yes. So we've just been chatting with Dave and Stella about what to expect for the ASPN meeting that is happening this weekend in Denver. But I know that you are on leadership for ASPN. So I would be interested in hearing about what is occupying the minds of the leadership of ASPN. What is our direction? What kind of thoughts are being shared?
Yes, secret thoughts. So yeah, so it's a really exciting time. So we just had our council meeting. And I think we're all excited to be back in person.
Yes.
See people. This is literally the first council meeting in person since 2019.
That's right.
So we haven't really seen anybody. And obviously, you know, things can happen via Zoom, but really there's a lot more brainstorming and sharing of great ideas and innovation that can happen when you're in person. I think something that we're really excited about is the strategic plan. So this will be our fourth strategic plan that we're launching right now. You know, there's been so much progress made with ASPN and the various work groups and committees and leadership opportunities, and there's been so much innovation, but really we're at this point now where we have to, what's the next phase of areas of interest, and how can we bring ASPN as a community to the next level? And so we're really excited about the strategic plan. Everyone has gotten a survey, which might have gone to their spam, but we really want to hear from everyone, particularly the people who don't necessarily feel that they're connected to ASPN. And so that's, we're really excited about that.
Right. We were just saying, Dave was just saying that, you know, ASPN, the programming offers something for everybody. Mm-hmm. There's something for clinicians, there's something for trainees, there's something for, you know, senior or middle management leadership opportunities and things like that. And then there's also, of course, the stuff we all love, which is research. So this is an ideal society of people from all different backgrounds to come together. And it's a very diverse group. We've kind of talked about that too. In terms of the strategic plan for the future, do you envision us partnering with other societies, ESPN and things like that? Where is that going?
Yeah, so we do have a connection with ESPN. Priya Verghese was the liaison to ESPN and sort of really brought together our communities more tightly than ever before. And I know you are now going to be the ESPN liaison, and you're going, where are you going in June?
Ljubljana.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that is a new, Priya was the first ESPN liaison, and that really sort of brought up our relationship, I think, between the two societies. Of course, we're intimately involved with IPNA, and, you know, we want to continue to foster that relationship and sort of increase the things that we offer together. So there's, you know, obviously the membership is together. We offer some educational offerings, et cetera. So I think we really, I think the whole COVID and the whole Zoom phenomena has really made us realize that the boundaries aren't there anymore that we thought were there.
That's
and
right.
So we should just welcome everyone together, and how can we grow as a whole pediatric nephrology community, whether you identify as with ASPN, IPNA, ESPN, you know, we're all one community of providers who want to improve care for children with kidney disease. So how can we work together and not duplicate efforts, but really just exponentially grow in what we do?
Do we have any contacts with Asia, Southeast Asia, China, anything at that end of the world? Or
I think
that...
through IPNA we do, but probably that's some area that we could explore more. I think through IPNA we do, but not more than that, I don't think.
Yes, absolutely. Well, that's exciting and lots of good things to come. So in terms of leadership at ASPN, can you just tell us, for the purpose of people who are just now starting at ASPN, who are the folks who are running the society?
Right. So I think this is really important for people to be aware of how things work within ASPN, because I think if you're new on the block, or if it's not necessarily something you spend a lot of time thinking about, it could seem very opaque. But just for everyone to know, there's the ASPN Council, and so there's the Executive Council, there's the President, President-elect, Secretary, and Treasurer. So Michael Summers is rotating off as the President. I'm rotating in as the President.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Meredith Atkinson is the President-elect. Adam Weinstein is the Treasurer, and Sandy Amaral is the new Secretary. Mm-hmm. And so that's the Executive, but the Council is much bigger than that.
Sure.
And so we really want to emphasize the inclusiveness of ASPN within all of the different committees, so workforce, research, program committee, clinical affairs, membership, all the different committees. They're all completely open. Anyone who has any interest in joining a committee can join, and I think that's really, really important. You don't need sort of an invitation. We want you to think about what you're interested in, and we would welcome you with open arms to participate. That was a big shift from 3 strategic plans ago, how ASPN worked.
Right.
And so we really want this to be the work of the committee be done by the ASPN to be done by the membership.
Absolutely. And I can actually vouch for that, because I trained at a small program, and, you know, I didn't have like a big group to interact with when I first started out coming here from UB. And over the years, I've just found my people and volunteered and done these things.
Yeah.
And I can't even believe that I'm, you know, hosting a podcast for us.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's really what I like about ASPN, is that the fellowship is very strong with us.
Yeah. And I think that's sort of something that throughout the strategic plan, like, I want to make sure that we're really reaching everyone. If you're in a small program, or no one in your place is involved in ASPN. That's how I got involved in ASPN. Was Joseph became division head in Seattle, and he, how should I say this diplomatically? He emphasized very strongly that we should all be involved in ASPN, and I didn't really know that I could just say, hey, clinical affairs, I want to be a member of you. Like, I thought there had to be some formal voting or nomination, and I didn't want to get into that because it was too stressful. But really, there is such great community building, and you all, like, it's just, it makes you feel good to be part of such an active, engaged community, and you do find your people. And so I just want to make sure that everyone feels that way, and I worry about people who feel on the outside of that, and how can we reach them?
Right. And so if this is your first ASPN meeting and you're standing in a corner at the member reception and wondering what you should do or whom you should talk to, literally anyone. There is nobody, I think, in our group, our community, who is not going to welcome meeting new people or trainees or fellows, medical students. So it's I really find that it's a very inclusive and amazingly welcoming group.
That's how I got involved with the ASPN program committee. I wondered how it worked, and I asked. And then Dr. Jennifer Charlton and Dr. Greenbaum at the time, next thing I knew, I was on the committee.
That's how it grew,
and
right?
Here you are.
Yes, there you go.
Exactly,
see, that's wonderful.
And you just need someone to sort of say, hey, come with me to this. You know what
exactly,
I mean?
Exactly, yes.
So you sort of, I mean, it's such a good point, you know, because sometimes you are in a big ballroom and you're just standing there by yourself and you feel intimidated to ask, hey, you know. And so I think, you know, as our job as leaders within ASPN and then the committee chairs, just to reach out to that person who might be standing by themselves and said, hey, you know, hi, I'm so-and-so, where are you from? And what is your area of interest? Are you good at tweeting? Are you good at podcasts? Or are you good at research? And so, yeah, I think that sort of is my mission. And then the other big area of focus we're having, other than the strategic plan, is about mentorship. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been really fortunate to have great mentorship. And, you know, it's not just about research mentorship, because that's sometimes just what you think about. But you know, sometimes you need clinical mentorship, or you need mentorship in the area of like, hey, I have young kids, I need to talk to someone else who has young kids, or mm-hmm. I'm a single parent and I need to know, how did you navigate this? Or I want to go part-time, how did you do it? And so there's so many areas that we can seek mentorship. And we know that ASPN is such a generous community with their time and expertise. And so we want to make sure that we can meet all of the needs of everyone. And so really to be able to figure out a way to make those connections for anyone, junior, senior, middle range faculty. And so that's an initiative that we're going to be starting, is a mentorship, broad mentorship offering.
Wonderful. So that's really something to look forward to, is mm-hmm. how to get our junior faculty to start getting more involved with this. I know that everyone's time is at a premium today, so I'm really thankful that the two of you could step in and talk to us about this. But Dave, I know you have to go.
Yes, I do.
Absolutely. So we're looking forward. We're looking forward to seeing you over there, and we will get you on Twitter. I promise. Maybe a fake account.
It's been brought up before. I think there might be one or two ideas out there. But thank you very much for the time and the opportunity to talk.
Thank you for stopping by. We really appreciate it, and good luck. It's looking like it's going to be a great program. And congratulations once again for all the work you've done.
The program committee did all the heavy lifting. I just sort of
That's teamwork. Teamwork, right? Yes.
Teamwork. The team, as they say.
Yes. So, Stella, a few minutes more with you. If you have to, Jody, you are welcome to stay too. And I know he had to go. So, we always host our annual meeting in conjunction with PAS. And I know that that has several advantages. Is there anything in the general PAS sessions that you are looking forward to?
Well, I'm really looking forward to the opening session, actually, because I feel like we have a lot of nephrology representation this year, with Dr. Pat Brophy being the PAS program committee chair.
Yes, yay!
Also, Ray Bignall is presenting this afternoon on health equity, which is a super important topic, and it's also a hot topic right now, so I'm interested to hear what he has to say.
He's also doing the podcast for the Denver group, and so I'm going to try to stalk him and get him on our podcast, too.
Definitely, yeah. Well, I'm interested in his talk, not only because it's important, but also because we were co-fellows. He was a first-year fellow, and I was a third-year fellow.
Oh, my goodness.
And, he used to call me Mama Stella, so I feel like a proud mama because he's presenting at PAS opening session. So
I happened to catch one of his talks last year on diversity and the challenges that face us, and I was really impressed. So I'm looking forward to actually seeing that in person. And it's great that an ASPN member is headlining PAS.
Well, thank you, Sudha, for giving me a chance to talk today, and certainly be fun to talk about our leadership development program, Cohort 6, that just started today. You asked me to tell you a fun fact. I'm going to give you two fun facts, so I know you can't wait. But first fun fact is we just had our 11th grandchild.
Congratulations!
Our daughter, first child. She lives in the Phoenix area.
Oh, okay.
So it's great.
We have a
flight all booked.
Wonderful. Yes.
So
yay.
It's going to be great. So. And then the other fun fact is we just got a HRSA grant to develop a virtual training program for pediatric faculty and residents.
Wonderful.
It's a large grant that's going to fund an initial program at Nationwide Children's, Colorado Children's, and Seattle Children's. We have 11 phenomenal co-investigators, experts in the field of developing resilience and really connecting with your joy and meaning and purpose in medicine. So stay tuned. I think it's going to be a really great project. And our goal is to be at 25 children's hospitals by year three. So hopefully some
amazing.
Of our audience will have a chance to participate. Mm-hmm. So that's fun. But, you know, it's also under that category of be careful what you wish for, because I put this team together and I'm the PI, and now we actually have to do it.
Now you have to do it. They liked your idea. They bought it, right?
Yes, exactly. Be careful.
But it is much needed, definitely. I think with the pandemic, everything that we've gone through and the attrition we're seeing amongst our faculty, I think we do have to think about ways that we can find that spark again.
Yeah.
So I think that'll be a very important work. So congratulations.
Thank you. I think we've learned a lot about this new educational space too. I'm not saying we've had decades of knowing how to give talks and lectures and you know, we've had maybe a decade of learning how to do family center rounds as imperfectly as that goes. You know, we've had only a couple of years of thinking about virtual education, but when we think about scalability, we can't fly people around the country to give talks about developing resilience and addressing your mental health. But we can do virtual training if we kind of learn from the pandemic and our efforts. And we have some consultants that are really experts at virtual education. And you know, we're not going to do any one-hour online modules. We've heard that loud and clear.
We have had enough of those.
So I think this will be an interesting kind of process, too, to see how we develop virtual training, virtual education that really meets the needs of you know, practitioners, physicians,
right.
Trainees.
And in a thoughtful way with some measures and metrics, and so at least we know what works, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yes. I think is really good news.
Yes.
Wonderful. I'm amazed at how we as a medical community are able to take lemons and turn them into lemonade. You know, the pandemic was horrible, but you know, we've taken what we've learned and put it to a good use and are using it to our advantage. So
yeah.
That's really great.
Well, you know, we are a pretty resilient bunch, us physicians. I mean, you know, to get into medical school, to make it through residency and follow your passion to become a practicing pediatrician, a subspecialist, takes a fair bit of resilience. And, you know, we talk about grit, you know, that combination of passion and persistence. So I think, you know, yeah, we've had this terrible pandemic and all this disruption of our personal lives and our professional lives, and somehow we've managed to, you know, get through it and take care of patients and survive. I think in my faculty development role, I will tell you, it's not surprising, but the faculty that have been most challenged by the pandemic in our institution have been the female faculty with young kids.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, talk to me in my role about, you know, what they're experiencing, and they have clearly been the most stressed. So I think we as, you know, leaders need to understand that everyone's experiencing these stresses, perhaps experiencing them differently, and we have to be really thoughtful about how we can help people and not just assume that, oh yeah, they're a resilient bunch, they'll get over it, because that's not really the best way to lead and the best way to have people thrive.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it helps to have leaders, people who are in positions of leadership, acknowledge that, because I know as if you're a junior faculty and you're struggling with childcare and, you know, a two-person household or a one-person household and you're responsible for everything, when you bring that to work and you're almost afraid to even say something because you'd be like, well, maybe everybody else has found a way to do this and I'm just the only one who doesn't know how to do this. But when your chair or people in positions of, you know, leadership acknowledge that it is hard for everybody, you create that space where people can come out and say, this is what's happening in my life and tell me how you did this. Mm-hmm. So I really like that throughout our ASPN programming this year, we do have opportunities for networking. And not only about the science, but also like for our member reception and areas where we can talk about these things with our colleagues and faculty.
Yes.
But I know that you're here, Dr. Mann, for running the leadership course. So I want to ask you, how's that going with cohort 6?
Yes.
Is it cohort 6?
Yes.
Okay.
Cohort 6.
And how long does each cohort stay with you?
Yes. So, yeah, we are. It's just so neat to be able to do this in person. We held off last year because we were really struggling to think that we could accomplish our main goals in a virtual environment, mm-hmm. given that we'd had the experience with the live course. So our typical course starts at a PAS, mm-hmm. Live, an all-day affair, and then coming back at the ASN for a second live session all day, and then our last session then would be at PAS. So typically we do it every other year because it takes 12 months to complete a cycle, and then when we finish cohort 6 in the spring of 2023, mm-hmm. our next PAS would be spring of 2024. And it works about right. You know, we had 15 individuals enroll this year. Okay. You know, it's a competitive process, but we're meeting the needs of most of the applicants that are interested. And sometimes people apply but find they can't fit it in because we are expecting and requiring people to be there live during these three sessions spaced out over 12 months. Moreover, it's really a longitudinal learning process, mm-hmm. that is competency-based. So one of the highlights of this program is the opportunity for the participants to do a leadership practices inventory, which is a 360. Oh.
Okay.
And in that 360, they have the opportunity to find out what their boss thinks of their leadership practices, what their colleagues and peers at work think of their leadership practices, and what the people that report to them think about their leadership practices. And then, of course, the individual in this 360 completes their own self-assessment.
Interesting.
So in our first session today, our 15 scholars had a chance to work with Ron Hadley, our consultant from industry, who walked them through, here's what it shows. What do you make of that? And the goal is really to have a better understanding of your own leadership strengths, mm-hmm. and areas for improvement. And each one of our scholars comes out with a leadership improvement plan. So what they can work on during these next 12 months to improve their leadership skills. So it's competency-based, and it's really based on the Kuznets and Posner model. That's what the leadership practices inventory comes from. And these gentlemen started this work 30 years ago in Southern California. It's a really well developed and validated program. There's been over 1 million people in the world that have taken this leadership practice inventory. It costs a little bit of money. and I know at the end of today's session, one of the scholars came up to me and said, who pays for this? And I said, well, your dues pay for this. This is an ASPN service.
Yes.
And when we started this back in 2010, Bill Schnapper, who we'll talk about in a moment, was president of council and really was willing to invest in leadership development program because he saw that our members would benefit both in terms of their own professional careers, their own institutions, but oh, by the way, this is the future for ASPN leadership. And mm-hmm. many of the grads that we've had over the years have gone on to chair committees for council, to be elected to council, and many of them have had advancing leadership positions at their home institution. So it was really, Bill Schnapper really got it and was willing to make that investment. So what I said to the scholar today was, you're all paying for it. Now, of course, you know, their chief has to approve of them coming and facilitate them coming to the live session. So folks are paying for that.
Absolutely. But it's important enough that I think any program would see value in that, definitely. And some of your graduates and current trainees, scholars, are also going to be featured on our podcast in the coming days.
Yes.
So we look forward to interacting with all of them. So this philosophy, it spans industries. It's not specific to medicine, right?
Yes. These practices are really practices that good leaders display in all kinds of settings, whether you're in industry, whether you're in academia, whether you're in nonprofits or in medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think of it as a competency, it's not just knowing what to do, it's mm-hmm. being able to do it. It's practicing the behaviors.
Execution.
Okay. So part of the 12-month process is our scholars develop a leadership development plan. So they identify something in their home institution that they're already doing or could do that would involve them leading.
I see.
Over the 12 months, take the skills they're learning from the course and apply it to that project. So we've had folks that have developed a QI project in their transplant program, the folks that have revamped the way they run their lab, We've had division chiefs that have developed a new way to do onboarding for faculty in their institution because their chair asked them to do it. So then the projects are fascinating. They're all over the map, but they're all about, you know, I'm going to take on this task, and I'm going to utilize the Kuznets-Posner model and show, you know, do the kind of job I hope to do and work on these skills. And since they've had that on the 360 to kind of highlight maybe where their greatest gaps are, they can pay particular attention
to that.
To that. So like for myself, I know the first time I took this tool 10 years ago, really the whole thing about it, one of their competencies is enable the heart, which is really about celebrating people and celebrating accomplishments. And you know, as I reflected, you know, I do things. I'm busy. Stella knows. We move forward, and then we're done. We go and do the next thing. And what I've really had to learn is, you know, I need to step back sometimes and just thank people, celebrate, have a party, send out an email. You know, make it a big deal when we accomplish something. So I think we're all we all can think about these competencies, and again, you know, you can improve on all five, but what we ask our scholars to pick one or two to improve upon.
Well, it sounds like a very exciting program.
it's interesting, and it makes sense to people, and I think at the end of the day, it delivers value, and that's why the folks that participate are engaged. And then at the end of the 12 months, they present a little five-minute demo of their leadership project. So they tell us what they learned, what they did, what they've learned. And in many cases, those things go on, right? It's not that they're accomplished in 12 months. So it is part of this concept of skill-based training, developing competencies, and the way you develop them is by putting these concepts into action.
I really like the practical aspect of the leadership program that you described, because I feel like a lot of leadership programs or curriculum, you know, they just kind of tell you how to be a leader, and then that's the end of the program, and you walk away not really knowing how to implement that knowledge. So the fact that, you know, the scholars have to improve on a couple of their skills by the end of the course, I think is very unique and very useful.
Yeah, really is a key element, Stella. And we have just added two more steering committee members, and we're going to be actually surveying our past graduates to see if we can have two more volunteer, because another part of this is having a circle of mentors. So every one of the scholars is in a mentorship group that meets every other month to kind of check in on their progress with their own individual plan, check in on progress with their project, and then check in about the concepts that we're reading about during this 12 months through the Kuznets and Posner model. So right now we have Joseph Flynn, Vicki Norwood, Barbara Fivish, and myself are the established veteran steering committee members. We've just added Marva Moxie-Mims and David Haynes, and we're going to be recruiting among our graduates to have two more people step up so that we can have a really diverse and experienced leadership team.
That's wonderful. And I know that Priya Varghese has started like a division directors kind of meeting through ASPN. Was that also an offshoot of this program?
Well, Priya was in one of her first classes. And she just came up to me today and smiled and said, I remember when I was in this course. And now, of course, you know, she's...
We're having her on later, so we'll talk about... women in nephrology, in fact, Stella, that's the topic she's picked to talk to us about. But I was, struck by the fact that, you know, following some of the trajectories of your graduates, it seems like it adds a lot of value. So, and again, another thing that ASPN does for its membership.
Yes.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned Dr. Schnapper.
Yeah, thanks, Sudha. So actually, at this PAS will be our first, William Schnapper Memorial Lecture. So Bill was a giant, and at the same time, he was a mensch. He was just a wonderful human. And Bill was a leader at ASPN for many years. He was president. He was on council. He ran the research committee. He did so many things in ASPN, and in 2018 was awarded the Founders Award. He also was very involved in the American Board of Pediatrics, and he was involved as a as an editor and as a chair of the Pediatric Nephrology Subboard for 20 years. And he just was a wonderful guy, mentored so many junior faculty and trainees, was continuously NIH-funded, was a scientist and a physician. So it's wonderful that, some of his family will be able to be here and honor this first Bill Schnapper lecture. It's a wonderful thing and something that will live on and really be a manifestation of Bill.
Well, looking forward to all the great programming. Anything in particular you're looking forward to other than these named lectures?
All the great programming. It is a seven-ring circus, isn't it?
It is. Oh, my God.
It's like you look here and you look over there and there's that. And, luckily I have the app, so I'm going to try to take in as many rings as I can.
As you can, yes. It's like being a child in a candy store for all of us. So. Well, thank you so much for coming by and talking to us, Dr. Mann. And we will look forward to chatting with you some more. You're going to be our recurring guest on the podcast for sure, but also at other venues and other locations and other meetings. So, and Stella, anything to add to round out?
The chair of the communications committee this year, I've been told it's my job to put in a plug for our hashtags. So, when you tweet or post about ASPN this weekend, please remember the hashtags ASPN22 and PAS2022. And for Twitter and Instagram, you can also tag PAS at PAS meeting.
Perfect, yes. So we will be tweeting, live tweeting many of these sessions in conjunction with the research committee. We will be around the convention center, so feel free to stop us, anybody from communications that you recognize. And we are not about catching people in corridors and getting little snippets from them for the podcast. So I'm looking forward to a wonderful weekend.